This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to the PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. We're back for another week as we're continuing our preview of the 2015-16 NBA regular season. We're so glad. We're so excited. November is almost here, even though they start in October, but really it's November, so I'm just making things up now. I am your co-host, Andrew Reese, and I'm joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
It's fall. Let's just say it's fall.
You know why I've always liked Halloween? Because there's a lot of times where Halloween correlates with the start of the regular season. Have you ever kind of found yourself sitting back on Halloween night watching a couple of NBA games?
I thought I used to enjoy Halloween because of the free candy when I was a kid, but okay, you can enjoy Halloween because of basketball.
Well, one of my favorite memories was you'll probably remember this, but Rick Pitino's first game when he coached the Boston Celtics, they beat the Bulls. They played without Scotty because Scotty was going through a contract dispute and an injury, or he said he had an injury. And Michael played, and Michael had a great game, but the Celtics won the game. And everyone's like, you see, the Pitino's team is back. And then they went on and had one of the worst seasons in Boston Celtics history.
Yeah, that's pretty much the Pitino era.
That was 1997, so yeah, I have great, great memories. I remember watching it on a Halloween night. Because I remember having to greet trick-or-treaters at the door while I was watching the game because I was such a huge Michael fan. It's really fun, you know, watching it right at the end of October, and then when it turns to November, you got the NBA regular season, and things kind of feel fresh and new, and then, you know, people do their armchair quarterback where they overreact over the first, you know, 2 weeks of the season saying, this guy's going to win MVP, this team is terrible, they're not going anywhere, and then they're probably proven wrong by the time they get to, like, 3 months into the regular season. So all the points that we've made in October and November are basically moot.
Well, remember last year how the Cavaliers were 0-1 or 0-2, and that was it. They're going to fire.
Oh, they're freaking out. Yeah,
the team is doomed.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, they had to make a couple moves to really, you know, help themselves. But yeah, you're right. You're right. This is where, you know, we're talking about how we got into the upper half of the NBA teams, you know, rankings. Last week when we talked about the I'll Be Watching You, which was a group of five that we like, but we had our reservations for. These are teams that everybody likes that we think are 100% going to make the playoffs, but really, it's one of these. It's a group where the story is not told in the regular season. It's told in the second season, the postseason.
These are solid second-round playoff teams, but then, you know, they're one piece away from being that upper echelon, one piece, one flaw, one. There's something missing, but they're up there.
We decided to name this group Winning Time. I named that one after one of my favorite ESPN 30 for 30 movies that they did about Reggie Miller's rivalry with the Knicks. Do you have a favorite 30 for 30? They've had so many of them.
Oh, I thought that was a reference to Tool Time.
Winning Time?
From Home Improvement. Tim Toolman Taylor, Tim Allen, Richard Karn. No.
No. Wasn't Richard Karn on Family Feud?
He was on a show before that, a sitcom.
Oh, that one. No, you know what? When I went to Disney World in 2000, they brought us to the set. They let us visit the set because that set was live. You know, they had the little live audience that they had, you know, when they would film it and all that stuff. And Home Improvement was okay. I mean, I wouldn't call Home Improvement like one of like the 20 greatest sitcoms ever, but it wasn't terrible. I'd rather watch that than fucking Full House or Family Matters.
It was one of those shows that went on way too long. Okay. It had its run, it had its moments, but you just took one joke, and how far can you take that one joke?
And then I heard Wilson is dead. Is that right?
No, I didn't know he was an integral part of that show for you. Where
Wilson? Oh, with the fence where you could never see his face.
I didn't know. I didn't know his death would mean so much to you.
Well, maybe he was like a registered offender and he could never get out of the backyard.
All right, back to basketball.
Well, do you have a favorite 30 for 30?
Oh, 30 for 30. I like the Michigan one.
A Fab Five?
Yes.
Well, you know what's weird, though? It wasn't, like, originally 30 for 30. It was kind of, like, slotted into, like ESPN Films. And then ESPN Films realized, oh, wow, if you put the 30 for 30 stamp on something, then it's way more popular because it's got a – we've built this brand. So now everything they do is 30 for 30. I think the new one that they just had was one called Trojan War, which is about that epic Rose Bowl game between USC and Texas when USC had Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart and Texas had Vince Young.
Vince Young, yeah.
Oh, greatest college football game ever. The other one I really loved was Survive in Advance about the NC State team in 1983. That won the tournament and beat Houston in the final. That's a terrific one. I'm biased for all the basketball ones, but Winning Time, oh, I absolutely love that one. Anybody who wants to forward to the 30 for 30 stuff, there's so many good ones. But no, we just use that one kind of as a phrase for, like, it's time to really make it, to take that step up if you want to be in that upper echelon, because there are reasons why you're here. When you're here, that means congratulations, you're in the conversation of being a good playoff team, but you're not at the tippy top just yet.
Yeah, you got that superstar, but maybe your number two or three guy might need an upgrade, something.
Were there any teams below that where you really considered them from 9 to 6?
No, there seemed to be a nice division. We, you know, as we heard last week, we had a nice little argument about the Heat, which I had ranked higher. And the problem with the Heat is, well, who would they possibly beat on this list? I could have one team they might be close to, but mm-hmm.
Miami, I wasn't high on. The Raptors were the team where when I took them down, I was like, I'm thinking about it. I want to like them, but there's good reason to kind of slot them down to the next group.
And it's one of those, can they beat any other teams on this list? And it's like, no, these teams
not.
Are really higher.
The Pelicans and Celtics are local teams. They're looking up, but there just wasn't enough there. The Milwaukee Bucks, the same. So I think we're pretty, this is the first grouping where you and I are pretty confident that these are the guys.
Yes.
One team where I really wanted to slot them as like a top six at the upper echelon, but you kind of talked me out of it, and so we'll discuss that one. That's going to be our last team. The first team we're discussing actually had the best record in the Eastern Conference, and that was the Atlanta Hawks. Why did they have the best record in the Eastern Conference?
Because all they really do is just shoot threes.
And share the ball, and team
play.
That was
just, they just kept passing it around, just find the open guy, and just shot threes, and they had the best regular season, but really struggled in the playoffs.
They were 10th in the points per game. They were 4th in field goal percentage, 5th in threes made, 2nd in three-point attempts, or three-point percentage, I'm sorry. They were 5th in points allowed, which is pretty good. Middle of the pack in pace. Steals, they were 5th. That was probably due in a large part to Damari Carroll and Paul Millsap having career years in terms of steals. And then they were 2nd in assists, like you were saying. Sharing the ball was a big thing for them. Their biggest weakness was rebounding, and rebounding is such a big part of your playoff performances. Do you think that was their ultimate downfall?
Combination of that and then the injury of Kyle Korver, and that seemed to take him down a lot.
Was there a difference between regular season kind of chugging their way out of the through the 60 win season Atlanta Hawks and then the postseason Atlanta Hawks? Do you think there was a difference?
Oh, there was a difference. They got completely muscled around in the second half. Everyone just sort of said, okay, we'll let you take the threes, but we're just going to sort of, you know, beat you down along the way. And you can see some of the decisions they've made are, well, questionable, but you can see they try to address some of those needs.
Out of the mix are Damari Carroll, who was one of part of their starting five. Actually, they won play him, Millsap, Jeff Teague, the point guard, Kyle Korver, who you mentioned, and Al Horford. They all shared player of the month, I think, in the month of January, which I thought was a little corny and weird.
That was terrible.
It's like the version, like the NBA version of everybody gets a trophy or everyone gets a car, you know. But Damari Carroll signed a big deal with the Toronto Raptors. They just couldn't afford him after they re-signed Paul Millsap to big money. They just did not have the cap room at that time to, you know, make the big deal for Millsap and match any big deal for Damari Carroll, especially with the fact that next season they're going to have an expiring contract for Al Horford, and he's probably going to be demanding max too. So they were looking forward, the GM of the Atlanta Hawks, Mike Budenholzer, because Danny Ferry was officially kicked off of the team in the offseason after the racist comments that he had made. Peiro Antic is now in Turkey. John Jenkins went to the Mavericks. Elton Brand retired. Elton Brand wasn't that bad of a player.
He's part of the Tim Duncan unknown All-Stars list.
Now, I'm not talking about Atlanta Hawks Elton Brand. He sucked. But
I'm
talking about Chicago Bulls, LA Clippers.
Yeah, that's what I said. The Tim Duncan unknown All-Stars. Like, you forgot like how good he really was throughout his career.
Undersized center, but he can score on anybody. That's what he really was. Defensively, not great. But he was good. He was good. You know, and when I watched his years in L.A., he was a force. I remember watching him thinking, man, this guy can score on anyone.
Yep, and then injuries slowed him down and slowed him.
Yes.
Slowed him. But, yeah, you know, Budenholzer, he's a GM. And I do not like any decision he has made thus far.
Well, do you think the biggest loss of the season for the Hawks was Danny Ferry?
I think that might be. Because you trade a first-round pick for Tim Hardaway Jr.? I mean, hopefully you know something that we all...
Hardaway Jr. was okay in his rookie year with New York, where... And then he had that rookie showcase thing where he went one-on-one Deion Waiters for a couple of possessions. But what it really showed with Hardaway is that he's got a decent outside shot, and he's got a little bit of length, so he can play small forward. But outside of that, yeah, not a very efficient player. And the Hawks are so big on efficiency, individually and as a team. Hardaway coming in there was odd.
Yeah, and... You know, have Sefish Losa being your default starting three now with Hardaway coming off the bench early.
Didn't they envision Sefish Losa as a starting three anyway? When they
I thought they envisioned him as a six man the same way he was sort of doing that in
Oklahoma
towards
City.
The end of Oklahoma City. Like, he started off starting and then sort of lost that and became better with the second round. But he's not going to provide any. You know, he's a D guy. He's not even a three guy anymore. So I don't. You know, Tiago Splitter, I was high on him at once, but he seems to have fallen off.
I think Splitter and then the other addition, Walter Tavera, is a draft pick out of the second round that they're bringing over. That's going to be the big key. It depends if they can really help out with the rebounding, because they were so bad. They were 28th in rebounding overall, and they were 30th in offensive rebounding. I think that'll help them. My problem with Splitter is that he's not a very mobile big man, you know, so he's not a guy that's going to go chase down an offensive rebound. So I'm not saying that he's going to make the offense for Atlanta stagnant, because it's just not a stagnant offense. It's a very it's from the Spurs ball, you know, which is where Tiago had played before. It's a lot of multiple action. It's a lot of screens. It's a lot of kickouts, you know. But when it comes to Splitter, do you think that will be the one resolution of their offense, their rebounding, or do you think that's just an inherent problem that they can't fix?
That's an inherent problem, because as much as you like Splitter and Tavares, I was very high on the draft last year, but
he's a big boy.
He's 7'2", but he's 250, and he's gonna take a while to develop. He needs to get a little stronger. But the problem is you have Horford and Millsap who are gonna gobble up most of your minutes, so he's gonna spell them both. And Horford and Millsap gave you that problem last year.
We talk about point guards a lot. You know, you and I are both on the same bandwagon that the point guard play in the NBA is just so good, it's almost ridiculous. But with Jeff Teague, where would you put him, like, in that echelon, and what kind of a player can he be for Atlanta? You know, he had the great Game 3 in Cleveland where he really basically carried the team after Korver's injury, and the Cavs won in overtime. But what can Teague do for them, you know, if one of these players excels, whether it be Horford, Millsap, or Jeff Teague, what can Teague do for them if he sort of excels and becomes the top player?
He went up in the rankings a bit. Well, you know, I think we have him at the middle of the pack, like 15th best, and he really improved. However, I don't see much in this current system I'm not going to say he doesn't really fit, but it doesn't go through him. as much as, yeah, he had that one good game, but the team is not built for him. He's just sort of a cog.
He's a two-guard being forced to play point guard.
Yeah, and the problem with this team is I have them down here because they got a year older, and in addition to them being exposed in the playoffs and not really making many adjustments.
That would be the next question that some of the listeners might ask. Why do you have a 60-win team in the second-best echelon in the NBA? I think it's because, and we're going to be talking about this with every single team that we talk about, and that's that just because you had a great regular season and you've had continuously good regular seasons, so if Atlanta even has like another 60-win year, it's really all about what you do in the playoffs. When I watch Atlanta in the playoffs, like you were saying, it was just not the same. I was watching a team that seemed desperate, that seemed like they weren't really sure of what to do at times, and they were kind of like reaching for things in order to get wins out of their out of really tough situations against Washington, and then against Brooklyn they didn't look.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say Brooklyn, who didn't even show signs of life in the regular season, really played them much harder than anyone even expected.
Yes, and Washington, I mean, if John Wall doesn't break his wrist, they probably beat the Hawks.
They probably would have. Yes,
it was to that level, I mean, it's not like we're trying to poo-poo on the regular season, because this is a regular season preview. But why are the Atlanta Hawks here?
They're here because, again, they got exposed, and I don't see them beating anyone above them because they haven't shown the ability to do so thus far. So if you can't get to the top of the hill and you didn't get better, all you could do is hope that everyone else got worse.
Do you think not having that star player hurts them? Even though Paul Millsap and Al Horford are all stars.
No, man, the team is the star player. They're all the player. They're all one player. Player of the month.
It's like the Power Rangers, where all of them would make one giant.
That was Voltron, I think.
No, it was the Power Rangers, too.
Power Rangers, too.
We're getting our nerd on now. I think they called them Zords.
Okay, that's way more than I know.
What do they call them in Ultron?
I just thought they formed one in the end. I don't.
Okay, moving on.
Back to the Hawks. they just get older. Al Horford did come back from his injury, much like we sort of predicted. A lot of people are like, oh, he's done. But he came back to his all-star form. It's just they're a year older. You signed Millsap to a lot of money, but he's getting mileage too. Korver, I don't even know how old he is anymore.
I think he's 32.
Is he 32?
Let me see. I'm going to have to... Thanks a lot. Now I'm going to have to actually go search this.
Oh, I think he's older than... I'll take the over on that.
You'll take the over on Korver. Yeah, but what is Kyle Korver? Like, even in his 30s, I mean, there's a lot of three-point shooters, like Steve Novaks of the world, and the... And I'm just thinking, like, Walt Williams, like, people that are just three-point shooters that didn't really mean anything to the NBA. What is Kyle Korver?
He's just a three-point shooter. That's it. He provides no D for the team.
But he's the best ever.
He is the best currently, and he's 34 right now.
Okay, so you took the over and won. How do you grow up in Lakewood, California, and you go to Creighton?
You're just not recruited. Mm-hmm. You're
Which
just not.
Goes to show, yeah.
The past 3 years in Atlanta, averaging over 30 minutes for 3 years in a row. So, that's you got to have some mileage on 34-year-old legs. And Ray Allen seemed to be that one guy who defied that and be a defensive guy still, but
that's the only problem. Korver hasn't been in the Ray Allen shoes where you have to make big shots in the playoffs. And then the one time he was in that position, he got injured. So, I know he had that run with the Bulls, but he was sort of a bit player that postseason when the Bulls played the Heat in 2011. I don't really remember much about Korver.
So. Like, last year, he played his mind out in the playoffs. Like, he did things like... Yeah, I remember him passing the ball more than I think I've ever seen him pass ever in the playoffs. And the only problem was, last year in the playoffs, he played 37 minutes a game.
And we're not trying to say that team ball is overrated. I mean, the Golden State Warriors won with a team that basically played like a team. The San Antonio Spurs did the same thing. But do you think that there is something to be said that a team that really focuses on it's all for one and one for all, that it can kind of hurt you at the end of the day?
Well, you just mentioned how team ball is how they got 60 wins in the first place, but then in the playoffs you throw everything out because everybody knows what you can and can't do at that point.
And when they start taking away those things and the machine starts to fall apart, then you're struggling. Now you're reaching. Now you're trying to just find something. Yeah, and they just couldn't find anything against Cleveland.
Yeah, you had 60 wins. Okay, yeah, well, you destroyed Philly and you destroyed Orlando. And, you destroyed...
Well, they were really good against the Western Conference teams, too. But yeah, but that's the regular season grind. The playoffs are different. You're in a fishbowl. You don't have to worry about the 28 other teams in the league. You worry about the one team in front of you. I think that was their problem. I think they had problem focusing and just staying on one team, and every team having a good game plan against them and trying to counter it. That was the one problem I think Mike Budenholzer had, even though he did deserve Coach of the Year. I think he did.
Yeah.
It was either him or Kerr.
No, he only got the AFC, the Eastern Conference Coach of the Year. I almost said AFC.
Before we leave Atlanta, Dennis Schroeder, what can he be?
I don't know what his ceiling is because he's not going to find it in Atlanta.
I will say, though, I think he's kind of sort of indispensable there. Like, you need a good backup point guard in a
season. You need a good backup point guard, but what's going to happen in 2 years when you have to pay him now? He's no longer under that friendly rookie deal, mm-hmm. So is he going to be worth $10 million a year to be your backup?
No.
Because that's going to be the backup range. If the starters are making, 20s and 15s, your backup's going to be set 8 to 10.
We're going to stay in the Southeast Division. And we're going to be talking about the Washington Wizards, the team that actually were defeated by the Atlanta Hawks in the second round of the playoffs. So this team was that's kind of what they were. They were kind of
Yeah, this team, just the coaching sort of defined the team with your meh.
Yeah. Well, when you say that with the coaching with Randy Whitman as the head coach, he took over when Flip Saunders was fired, in the second, John Wall's second year. That was back in 2012. What was it about the coaching that sort of either held them back or pushed them forward? Because I think it's kind of one of those things where it helps them out in some ways, defensively and in terms of winning games in the regular season and growing, and then it sort of holds them back in the playoffs when they need to win games.
Well, they seemed to win despite his coaching. It was just sort of questionable at times and lackadaisical and just even apathetic at points. It was just like, we don't know if we really care to win. We don't have a game plan.
They were 46-36, and if you watched them in the beginning of the year, you would have thought to yourself, man, this is a 50-win team. They're on their way, and then they started to slip again. Their stats were middle. They were good on the defensive side. Points allowed, they were 10th. Rebounding overall, they were 8th, even though their offensive rebounding was bad. Their turnovers, they were 25th in terms of on offense, which means that they had a really sloppy offense. They were like near the bottom in three-pointers made, even though their three-point percentage was really high. But I'll tell you what, right now, after watching Randy Whitman's Washington Wizards team, they have no – it's not one of these things where they're going to try to flip the switch on three-point shooting. They have no intent of shooting threes. They want to play – they want to play slow. They want to beat you down in the post, and they want to play classic – beat you up ball.
Well, that is, the coach playing towards the players he has. If you have a Gortat, a Nene, a Chris Humphreys, mm-hmm. who are just going to beat you down, well, we got to play with them. We can't just, play finesse ball with Bradley Beal and John Wall and hope they form a little tandem. No, you want to utilize your players while you can.
Is John Wall the best point guard in the NBA?
No.
How close is he?
He's top four, top five.
I mean, because we always talk about Westbrook, so Westbrook's sort of the X factor. We'll put an asterisk by him because he's all everything. I could put him at power forward and win games. But you got Chris Paul.
Westbrook, Paul, and Curry.
And who again?
Steph Curry.
Okay, yeah, that's a... Man, the guard guards are so weird now. You watch them and you're like, that's a shooting guard, but he plays the one, you know? It's just, the point guard is so loaded right now in the NBA. But John Wall, what makes him special?
He's that classic throwback point guard.
But he's got the niftiness of a new generation point guard.
He has that speed, the finesse, but he has that sort of eye test that Charles Barkley, you know, loves. It's just like, well, he looks like a point guard. He plays like a point guard. Yeah. He's not one of these hybrid guys or too
complimented by the fact that his assist numbers have been so high in the last 2 years.
He's just somebody who gets better, wants to get better, and, you know, he's somebody who just gets it and understands. That's why he's in that group.
And here's where I think he's different from some of the other topics. He's a humble, likable guy. He seems like one of those guys that really plays for the team. He doesn't get bothered by, you know, Randy Whitman's stupidity as a head coach and, you know, the defensive mindset. He just rolls with it. And also, tremendous playoff performer. I think he's saved his best games for the playoffs for the most part.
And he's a player who will play hurt.
Yes.
He's not going
to,
you know.
To his detriment with all the controversy that they had in after the wrist injury, where it was like, will he or won't he? And some people within the team were saying he should play through it, and then it got a little bit messy where Whitman had a blow up.
Yeah, and just a quick touch on Whitman. Probably mentioned in previous episodes about coaches, mm-hmm. how coaches can win you games or lose you games. Mm-hmm. You know, would you rather bet on George Karl or Brad Stevens or Randy Whitman?
Randy Whitman is a guy where if he's in the... I mean, this is a man who's got a clipboard upside down trying to draw up a play in the last play of a playoff game. I mean, it's not that he's like... It's not like he's just dumb. It's just that it's one of those things where the moment got too big for him, you know, where I really feel like it just came down to strategy as to why they lost to the Hawks. They lost to the Hawks on a putback by Al Horford. A lot of people would say that was just lack of effort by Nene. At least I would say that. But then there are some people that would say, well, yeah, it was bad execution. And the reason why the Hawks got them back into that game is because they blew a big lead in the fourth quarter. And that's kind of the coach's fault.
Yeah. And, well, okay, you lost the last second, but what, you know, what led up to it? There's
exactly.
Tons of plays that shouldn't have been there in the first place. And he's just a coach who, you know, okay, well, we want Whitman after the flip side, because it's a comfort thing, and we'll take the assistant because we like him, and we don't want to bring a new guy in that might mess up our chemistry. But
go ahead.
This team would be, you know, what's this team missing? A coach that can get them to the top.
Here's where the Wizards are a little different from another team that is sort of known for the grit and the grind and kind of playing physical on the Western Conference side of things and over in Memphis. The Wizards are a little different because the Memphis Grizzlies don't really have that one spectacular player. They've got a lot of really good ones, obviously, like Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph and Mike Conley, but they're the kind of team that's like permanently fused. Like they're put together that way and you're just not changing it. Whereas with the Wizards, you've got the spectacular play of John Wall. You got Bradley Beal, who at times can really step up and be a fantastic player. It's after that that the whole team is kind of mundane. You know, that's why Paul Pierce, I think, stood out, you know, in the playoffs, because he was that one guy that could make plays for them, and that was sort of missing from Washington in the previous postseason. Now Pierce is gone. He went to the LA Clippers to go play for his old coach, Doc Rivers. Otto Porter's there now. I'm just leaving that out there.
Good luck.
I mean, is there something weird about how mundane the whole team is outside of Wall?
No, because, like I said, Bradley Beal, after his rookie year, everyone was giving him a max deal. He's the next All-Star. And then he sort of tapered off a little bit. Mm-hmm. You have the two, you know, big guys in the center who are just going to beat you down. And then you just have this glut of threes who nobody... They have a log jam with nobody good.
Garrett Temple, Kelly Oubre. You know, even I mean, Porter, well, we just talked about.
You like Kelly Oubre. I think he's just the next Xavier.
He's confident. He's very confident. I mean, in college, I thought he stunk. I thought he was saving his talents for the next level. But, you know, his three-point shooting is going to be valuable for them because even though they were a high-percentage three-point shooting team, they never took any. I don't think all of a sudden they're going to say, hey, let's just take a bunch of threes. Like, I don't think that the Wizards are built that way. And I don't mean that in terms like the coach being really like really stubborn or really like, you know, set in his ways. I just think the coach don't know better.
Well, the thing is, this team is sort of built for threes. If you put Martell Webster and Bradley Beal out there, okay, you got two guys who are going to shoot the three. Mm-hmm. There's your three-point shooting.
And look who they bring in. They bring in Jared Dudley and Gary Neal, three-point shooters.
Yeah, Jared Dudley, I think, is sort of that locker room presence, that overall good guy.
Yeah.
But like I said, there's just a glut there, and you hope Otto Porter Jr., like, this is the year he has to get it or he'll be done, you know, as it's just a mistaken number three pick, but...
The other thing about the Wizards is, like we keep saying about regular season versus postseason, the postseason Wizards are very, very different. Like, especially on the road. Like, how do you explain the road success of Washington? Like, where does that come from?
Well, last year, I'm going to say it's because of Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce and the Celtics are just built on, we'll play on the road. We'll tank the last 3 weeks to save ourselves and just be the road team. We don't care. We'll be the villains. Mm-hmm. Whereas other people are like, well, we get to sleep in our beds.
Even the previous year before Pierce, when they played the Bulls and the Pacers, they were great on the road. I think they only lost one road game.
Well, the Bulls, that was just because of the rivalry that these two teams have. The Pacers, the Pacers had, you know, they ran out of steam, so you can't really. Mm-hmm. I would put a little asterisk next to that. That was just more Pacers falling down as opposed to the Wizards rising up.
But the funny part is they played three teams, the Raptors, the Bulls, and the Pacers, and everyone's like, well, yeah, they kind of line up all these excuses for why the Wizards have success. We got to give credit to the Wizards for something.
We got to give the credit to the Wizards because they have the Raptors' number. The Pacers was just the Wizards seem to learn scheduling, and they sort of figure out the teams they want to play. Mm-hmm. And okay, this is the team we're going to play next. Let's now prep that style as opposed to let's just sort of half-ass our way in like they did all season.
Yeah, the Wizards in the previous 2 years have sort of had an inverse happen to them. You know, going into 2014, people were expecting them to do a little better, but they did a lot better than people expected and went farther in the playoffs than anyone imagined. Whereas in the season following, people's like, okay, now's the time for the Wizards to step up, and then they kind of took a step back, and then they started pushing forward in the playoffs again when nobody expected it. What do you think will happen next season or this upcoming season? Do you think that we're going to be seeing a Wizards team that's going to play up to snuff in the regular season and then really make a run in the playoffs, or do you think we're going to see more of the same where the regular season they're a little
we're going to see more of the same? They'll be like 45-37 losing in the conference semifinals
but getting through on the road in the first round to do so.
They'll probably play Toronto again.
Poor Toronto. We should have just flipped them and just so we could set this all up again. I don't see a change here for the Wizards, but losing Pierce. I know Pierce didn't put up big numbers because he was saving himself for the regular season, for the postseason. He even said so himself. But I think Pierce's loss is monumental. I think they're going to miss Kevin Seraphin a little bit.
Well, Seraphin just wanted more playing time, and you know you can't fault him. He was buried, and he's going to continue.
Yeah, he got mocked for a couple of, you know, being on the receiving end of some poster dunks. But I felt like he gave him a little bit of inside presence, and he was able to relieve Nene, who was really inconsistent. Nene, I thought, had one of his worst years last year.
Yeah, he took it down.
I don't care about the stats. I watched Nene in the playoffs. He just looked like he lost a step. I was watching him thinking, I know that a big part of what the Wizards do is Gortat and Nene in the paint being true centers and power forwards, but you need to do more than that in order to push through in the playoffs, and I think that might be one of their downfalls, that they're set up with this team, especially with Gortat and his contract, where you have to play these big guys, you have to play true to that in the post, but if those are the guys that you're relying on, then you're putting a lot of pressure on John Wall, you're putting a lot of pressure on Bradley Beal and Otto Porter Jr. to make plays, and after that, you got to work on your bench, and I think they helped out with their bench a little bit with guys like Neal, Allen Anderson, Jared Dudley, but it's not like that they became a great bench overnight.
Well, they got a solid bench, and also what you can hope is they took away the lessons from Paul Pierce, because Brooklyn took away nothing. They're just like, whatever, thanks for playing, but hopefully these young guys took the habits and the teachings to heart, because they can be a good team.
Okay, we're going to go to the Central Division now in the Eastern Conference, and we're going to be talking about a team that was last year everybody was high on them for a lot of different reasons, and I really didn't doubt it either. And now they're in a position where they really have the same team, but they had to replace their head coach, and that was the Chicago Bulls. Let's start right there at the top. Did you like the idea of firing Tom Thibodeau and replacing him with former Iowa State head coach Fred Hoiberg?
The way they did it, no. They did it very dirty. If you're just going to let him go, let him go. Don't, you know.
You're talking about holding him out until all the hires were made and then
fire. Yeah, don't do this dog and pony show and then get rid of him anyways. Fred Hoiberg, I don't see him as an improvement personally, but it could just be that change of pace. You already have the pieces. You just need that little last little oomph to take you over. I don't think Steve Kerr did that great of a job. It was just that little, you know, that change of scenery.
Well, do you think that's the mindset there in Chicago, you know, with Reinsdorf and them, where they feel like, or Gar Forman, the GM there, where they feel like, you know, in Golden State, they had a team that was ready-made, and they just made an improvement on the offensive end, and then they took off. Do you feel the same way with the Chicago Bulls?
No, I think this is a little different, because the Bulls was just sort of them just butting heads with Thibodeau. It was, you know, Thibodeau was bitching, well, I didn't win because I didn't have a bench.
But to his detriment, he did overplay his starters.
Well, he did overplay his starters, yeah, but he said, I didn't have a bench. Okay, so we'll finally loosen up the purse strings. Okay, we'll get you a player or two. Here you go. Here's a bench.
Here's a Mirotić. Yeah, here's Pau Gasol to relieve.
Still nothing. And it's just like, okay, well, we give you what you want. You failed. You know, time to go. We don't like your style.
So you didn't have any problem with the actual decision to let Thibodeau go? Thibodeau.
No, because you knew that was going to happen. Because this season, you could see he tried to be more like, hey, I'm hip, I'm casual, I'm cool, I get it.
Have you ever seen Tom Thibodeau be hip?
But it was sort of like, you know, the sitcom where you have that the dad dresses to the kid's school. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the same thing. No, man, I'm giving my players a rest. It's okay they played half-ass today.
Well,
I get it.
Like, we talked about that in the beginning of the 2014 season preview, where we said they're trying to make the Bulls more of an offensively-minded team, you know, now that they have a guy like Pau Gasol. They're giving more minutes to Jimmy Butler. Mirotić comes in. But by changing the rotation, you sort of hurt the defensive vibe that team, that really built that team from the beginning under Thibodeau. And I think that kind of hurt them to where their defense was still good, but they definitely took a step back, and their offense went from awful to middle of the pack. So at the end of the day, what you wind up with is a mediocre offense and a good defense, instead of a great defense and a bad offense, which is what I would rather have.
Yeah, you have the Detroit Pistons in that case.
Mm-hmm.
You're old school. But basically everything, I think, I don't want to boil it down to everything, but a lot of the unraveling came, which is Derrick Rose is falling apart.
What is Derrick Rose now? Derrick Rose, for me personally, I feel like now he's a good point guard. He's one of those middle-of-the-pack good point guards. I don't think he's a top-10 guy. He obviously can't manage the minutes anymore from a day-to-day basis. He's one of those guys where you're just going to have to shut him down for 2 or 3 months in the regular season so you could try to save his legs for the postseason. But in terms of overall play, you look at his numbers. It was the worst number since his rookie year. I think he's just a good point guard at the end of the day. That also counts the game winner he had against Cleveland, the good games he had against Milwaukee, because the problem is it's so feast or famine. He would follow up a great game with a really awful one, and if you really look at the cumulative total with Derrick Rose, I just think he's a good point guard and nothing more.
Yeah, and, you know, con numbers aside, and, oh, well, he shouldn't be making that much money, and, you know, max deal, blah, blah, blah. If you can't be on the court, how valuable can you be? You have, you know, whether you're putting in 20 points, 10 assists, or you're just putting in, you know, a stinker of a game, how good can you really be if you're, you know, the last three seasons in a row, he played 39 games, 10 games, and 51.
And 51 just this past season. Where
51 this past season.
People were saying he's back. It's like, no, he's not. He missed 31 games.
So that's the problem, is how good can you be if you can't get on the court? You could have a stinker game, but stats don't always tell how good you are. We know that. But if you're only playing, you know, two-thirds of a season, and everyone's like, well, that we're happy for that.
And the problem with Rose is that you want, especially with Steph Curry, when they brought in Steve Kerr and Alvin Gentry was the assistant coach. I mean, that was heaven for him. It's like, oh, you're going to put me in an offense where I run a lot of pick and roll and I shoot a bunch of threes? Thank you very much. Whereas with Derrick Rose, you bring in Fred Hoiberg, and his idea is to, like, a lot of penetration, a lot of corner threes, a lot of a lot of action where they try to kick back out. That's not Derrick Rose's game, really. You know, he's one of those guys that kind of likes to he's got the blazing speed. He's a good defensive point guard, but he's not one of those guys that offensively is just going to penetrate constantly and look for open shooters, all that. That's not how the Chicago Bulls are built, especially this roster the way it's built. Derrick Rose can do the penetration still, but he's not a shooter. So what does Hoiberg do with Derrick Rose?
There's nothing you can do with him. Are you going to put Aaron Brooks in there? Or Kurt Heinrich, who's probably 85 years old now?
Did it shock you that they didn't bring in a new face to try to help relieve Rose? Maybe a good... Like, even if they had to overpay for a guy like Reggie Jackson, like, did it surprise you that they didn't try to get a good point guard?
They have no money. By re-signing Dunleavy, which I don't know why they did that.
Re-signing Butler to Max was another part of it.
Well, yeah, that's the point. You give Butler Max money, you don't have much money for anybody else. And okay, it's his team now. Noah, we've had discussions for a year about how much does he have left in the tank? Is he really done?
Yeah, and Tony Snell's not a point guard. He's a two that plays defense.
He's a two, and Ejuan Moore is a two as well. So, we're waiting for Doug McDermott to show up. Your boy.
He looked good in summer league for the second year in a row.
Okay.
So there's that. Bobby Portis did too. What about him at the rookie at Arkansas?
He could be one of the steals of the draft. If he watching him play in summer league, he reminded me of like Carlos Boozer.
Now Taj Gibson's got some problems, but he should be ready. But do you think there's a chance that Portis might steal some of his minutes?
Portis should be able to steal some of his minutes, but. Okay, you got Gibson, Vitrotic, Gasol, and Noah ahead of you.
My problem with Noah is that I think he's the odd man out in the whole game of this. Like, I think that next summer they're gonna tell Noah, it's okay, you can go. We're not gonna try to pursue you for like max money. You can go somewhere else if you want to. It's one of those like amicable split type of deals.
Like, see what the market gives you. And be like, oh, man, we priced out of it.
Where does he fit there with Hoiberg's system? You know, Hoiberg likes versatility, and he likes to play fast. Noah's got decent footwork, but he's had foot problems and leg problems. You know, he's slowing down. He's a defensively-minded center, but I don't know what his value is as a distributor. I know he had He had that little area for a while where he was like the point center for Chicago after Derrick Rose had another injury, and he was passing the ball a lot, and he was like the leader of the Bulls team. But that team didn't do that great, and now he's in a position where he's purely a defensive guy now that Paul Gasol is there. So where does Noah fit now on this team? He feels like a fish out of water.
Kind of, however, that's the thing with Hoiberg. Hoiberg has a system. But you have Noah, who's 30 years old, and you have Gasol, who's 33, 34 now. Mm-hmm. You have two aging front court guys. I don't think they can run this up and down a system he wants to run.
I think Hoiberg is committed. Even if they play a little slower, three-point efficiency and field goal efficiency is going to be a huge part. And they were 22nd in field goal percentage. That has got to go up. You know, their three-point percentage was good. You know, Dunleavy was not a bad shooter from the three-point line. Neither was Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler had a spectacular year, and he earned a pretty good contract for himself. You know, he bet on himself and he won. But what do you think of Jimmy Butler overall? You know, do you think he's the type of all-star player that we saw last year, or do you think he might slip a little?
Even watching him last year, I don't see him as that top five talent he claims to be. Mm-hmm. Like, what is he elite in?
The defense. One-on-one defense. But what really shocked people is that his field goal percentage rose so high that Thibodeau took the hot hand and said, okay, we're just going to give this guy the ball and let him shoot since his field goal percentage is going to work out to where he averages about 20 per game. And that's what he did.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, he's this elite defender. He had his one hot year. But I don't see this continuing. Like, it's just, you know.
Well, he's being paid like one, that's for sure.
This is his team now. It is no longer Derrick Rose's team. It is now Jimmy Butler's team.
I 100% agree with that. I think this is Jimmy Butler's team now.
It's just, I don't see how you go up statistically everything. I just don't see how you can't be the elite defender and then be this all-star. You can't be this two-way.
Well,
the two-way superstar, I think those days are sort of over.
Well, he was renowned for playing a ton of minutes. You know, a lot of people worry in the later years for Jimmy that's going to really wear him down. But we'll see that in the future. The thing with Hoiberg that I saw in Iowa State, because I saw a ton of those college teams, and I loved his Iowa State Cyclones teams, is that he played. You know, and we kind of talked about this with a previous team. I think it may have been the Bucks, where they play a lot of guys out of position. But he plays them out of position because he knows what their strengths are in terms of skill. So he would play a bigger guard like DeAndre Kane, and he would let him play the point guard. He would play Melvin Ejim inside, even though he was 6'6", because he had the versatility of a big man. With Jimmy Butler, he has the versatility to be a ball handling guard, but by doing that, you sort of take away those minutes from Derrick Rose, and maybe you're going to be able to rest him. Do you think that might be the master plan?
That could be, but that requires
that would force Snell and Heinrich to play off guard,
and that would require some development from McDermott. And like, you know, we mentioned, like, they have a logjam in the bigs, and the smalls seem to be lacking in depth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, oh, we got Rose, he's the cornerstone, we don't need anybody. We got this young up and comer, and you know, you don't need to limit his minutes now. He's only, you know, it's now his fifth year. We don't need to worry about that for another 2-3 years.
When you watched them at the end after they got eliminated by Cleveland game 6 at home, what was your take on the Bulls going forward? Like, when you watch them, did you think, man, this team ain't going anywhere, or man, they're one move away from being a title contender? Like, what did you think of the Bulls? And has your mind changed since Hoiberg got there?
Oh, I've already, my opinions on Hoiberg are known already, but I thought they weren't built to match up with Cleveland. Cleveland just dictated the pace and just dictated everything the whole way through, and the Bulls just sort of rely on sort of that name brand. Like, well, we have Noah, he's our cornerstone. We now have Gasol, we now have this, and they didn't really, I don't want to say they didn't bring it, but
their effectiveness was more hype than it was.
Yeah.
It showed, yeah.
And, you know, I didn't see Gasol as a fit, you know.
I just feel like they're following the Warrior model, only it's different in that, you know, the Warriors had an offensively gifted team already, and all they had to do was kind of put a couple more pieces in place, improve the defense and the rebounding a little bit. They kept the roster in check for the most part, outside of like one or two changes, and then they took off. And they think that it might be able to work a little bit here, but what it is that Thibodeau's philosophy was so dramatically different from what Mark Jackson did in Golden State that it's almost literally night and day between, you know, what Hoiberg wants to do and what Thibodeau wanted to do. The other thing I forgot to mention is that Rose had had a facial injury in practice, so there's a chance that he might miss time to start the season, but we're not exactly sure about that. So I don't know how that's going to slow down Derek. I don't know if he'll come off the bench. It's going to be interesting to see how Hoiberg plays that team, because it is going to be a lot different in terms of, it's going to feel a little bit like a new team, even though nothing changed because of the style of play being so dramatically different. But I hope it's not one of these things where the style of play does not fit at all. That happened with Jaeger. Remember with Dave Jaeger when he had the Grizzlies and they tried to play fast and they hated it, and
yeah,
the team was losing, and then they kind of went back to playing, you know, that slow ball again, and because they were comfortable. I wonder if that's going to happen in Chicago with the players.
I think that sounds plausible.
And speaking of Dave Jaeger, we're going to go to the Western Conference now. We're going to be talking about two teams. The first one is the Memphis Grizzlies. The Memphis Grizzlies are just one of these teams where slow and steady wins the race. Do you think that was the right? Do you think that's just the right approach for Memphis?
That's the only approach they seem to know, and they just, you know, they basically just double down on it every year. Like, oh, that's what we are. We are who we are. Let's just keep going. And you know, last year that was my big. I wrote them off last year. But they're done. They can't do anything. And then they just, one team to sort of slow down Golden State.
Yeah, they had a 55-27 regular season. They started out pretty hot, fizzled a little bit in the second half, but still a pretty great year. Their defense, again, always great. Second in points allowed. Their field goal percentage defense was excellent. Rebounding, not great. You know, this is one of those trends that we've noticed out of Memphis for the last couple of years, that even though they get that grit and grind reputation, their rebounding is like in the lower half of the NBA. Their blocks are 24th in the league. But steals, they're 7th. You know, they like to get after it with guys like Tony Allen, and, you know, Mike Conley is a steal artist himself. You know, Jeff Green coming in really came in and gave him a lot of life. You know, also helped relieve Courtney Lee a bit from starter's minutes. What did you think of Jeff Green in Memphis, where he opted in on his player option, so he's going to play one more year there?
I thought he played well there. Other people seemed to think it was a disaster, which...
I don't know who said that.
You read it on the interwebs. There's some people like, oh, this isn't working out. He's not the player we thought he'd be. And yeah, he's not going to be that superstar to take over, but he was a nice complimentary piece, which I think that's what I expected him to be. And he fit. He seems to be, sadly, a little too athletic for that team. Mm-hmm. A little too fast, even though he's not at all. But he's a solid sixth man for them.
Giving Mark Gasol max money for 4 years, right decision?
Of course.
I mean, pretty safe bet.
That was the one. Nobody thought he was leaving. Everybody, yep, it happened. He's giving you what he gives you.
I know the Grizzlies are sort of kind of, I already said how they're kind of permanently fused together in terms of their team ball, but hasn't it kind of slowly morphed into a big three with Gasol, Randolph, and Mike Conley? Or would you put Allen in that mix as being just as indispensable as the other three?
Well, Allen isn't indispensable because all he does is just provide the defense. He is that lockdown defender.
Did you know he's first team all defense?
Is he?
Tony Allen will tell you.
Like, he should be.
I mean, you saw him in Boston a little bit. I mean, what's the value of Tony Allen that you don't see in the statistics? Because it's not in the statistics.
It's not. He's just, you'll notice he just look, he's going against, check that guy's stats every night. You notice, oh, you know, so-and-so had an off night. No, he was playing Tony Allen. Okay, you know, you go against, the problem with this team is, everybody said it, they just don't, they apparently are playing at the 1970s practice court with no three-point line.
Yeah, they are allergic to threes.
And they don't know how to take them.
And it's one of those teams where it's not like there's no inkling of, well, maybe they'll shoot threes next. No, they are not going to shoot threes. That is not what they do. That is not how they're built.
Every year they're like, you know what your team needs? A three-point shooter. Okay, we got you. With the 24th pick, Memphis Grizzlies select power forward. You know, and every year they're like, nah, we're just going to keep doubling down what we do.
Jarnell Stokes, like Jarrell Martin, Jamichael Green, who they got off of waivers, you know.
Brandon Wright, they got to replace Kostakoufos. Great,
solid. They seem to like Russ Smith, but Russ Smith he's not like a three-point shooting type of like point guard. He's more of like a playmaking little guard. And then they bring in Matt Barnes. Now, Matt Barnes had good three-point field goal percentage, but that's not what he's here for. He's here to be a pest, and he's here to guard the two or the three when Tony Allen rests. That's pretty much his role.
And yeah, if you put a combination where you start both of them, you're there just to annoy the other starters and hope, you know, to do the old school run our test. I'm just going to get under their skin early.
You really liked Vince Carter's role in Memphis. Why?
Because he's no longer that high-flying all-star he once was, just become this tiny jump-shooting guy and accepts his role as the ninth man. And he'll still give you buckets. He's a very good jump shooter.
They didn't really get a guard to help replace Nick Calathes. Do you think they're going to miss him? I mean, Calathes played really nicely for them in different points.
Why get another guard when you can get another power forward?
Yeah, well, they lost Kufos, so they tried to balance that out by getting Brandon Wright in free agency. Now, Brandon Wright, you saw him for like a cup of coffee in Boston.
Not spectacular, but efficient.
And that's what Costa Kufos kind of is.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of an upgrade. I was really surprised about Brandon Wright. I was just always up, another lottery bust. But then you just watch his game, it's like, well, he's not trying to be the all-star. He's just going to be there to sort of take five shots and hit three.
Do you think that's kind of a contagious type of culture there with Memphis, where regardless of your namesake and regardless of, you know, of your reputation elsewhere, when you come in, you know your part, you play your part, and if you really buy in, you can excel at it, like a Beno Udrych. Like, if Beno Udrych played for the Pelicans or if he played for the Miami Heat, he would probably stink. No one would probably watch him. But in Memphis, he just found a nice little niche. Do you think it's sort of a good niche type of team for certain people?
Well, that's the thing. I think that's sort of the problem, is this team has been together for sort of too long. With the addition of Courtney Lee a couple years ago,
who started a lot.
Yeah, you now have your starting five has been together for a while, and Tony Allen's been a starter since he's been there, and it's just, you gave Conley the keys too young, but he surprised many, because remember they gave him the extension, and it was like, oh, that's horrible, and he's one of the worst deals. Now all of a sudden it's like, well, he was a value.
I think the key for the Grizzlies is this in the regular season, in terms of keeping the wins up and continuing to be a playoff contender at this point. Their defense is always going to be great, and they're always going to play slow because they just don't know any better. They have a 26 in pace, and that's okay. They get to the free throw line a lot because Zebo is a free throw eater, and so is Gasol. They just live at the free throw line, and that's okay. It's good to be sort of an attacking offense. The problem for me is that if you're going to be an anemic three-point shooting team like they are, and if you're going to embrace it, you need to keep your field goal percentage high, and you need to have at least a somewhat middle-of-the-pack efficient offense in terms of all the other things, whether it comes to like assists or limiting turnovers. They did a good job of that last year, but they have to continue that. If that starts to fall off the rails, we might see another season like they had in 2014, where they had a horrible offense, but they somehow snuck their way into the playoffs, and they gave the Oklahoma City Thunder trouble, which just goes to show that they have the talent there to match up with a lot of different types of teams in the West, mostly offensively minded teams, because their defense is so effective. But isn't there something on the offensive end that they have to add to the mix in order to really
move? Well, they have to, because the difference, like you mentioned, between regular season ball and then postseason ball is, okay, you can play your, you know, slowdown pace.
Yeah, postseason ball is naturally slower.
It's naturally slower, but if you don't play that, you're not there. You watch, the one thing I noticed about the Grizzlies in the playoffs is they had just zero separation. They're like, nope, where this is still regular season for us, we kept it, and, you know, we're not going to, we don't have this extra gear to us, we're just playing our style. And
yeah, there's no rabbit in the hat.
There's no way in the head. And also, they're getting older. Zebo is going to slow down.
That was my big question there. How much more does Zach Randolph have left?
And once you lose him, your team, I don't want to say it falls apart, but that slowdown dynamic is going to have to change. Mm-hmm. Because whoever replaces him is not going to be that same style of player.
Is Randolph one of those guys like Duncan, where he's just going to be a really efficient scoring big man off, you know, he has a left hand, Duncan with his right, but because of his left-handed play, do you think that he's just going to be one of those guys where he goes into his late 30s, at 35, 36, and he's still going to be a double-double type of guy? Or do you think there is an end game there?
I hope he's one of those players who goes, because he's one of those stories of, remember how much of a bonehead he was in
Portland, part of New York,
Jailblazers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he comes to Memphis and it's like, well, he's now somebody who gets it. He's now a, you know, pillar of the community, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, he was, what was it, 2011 he had his injury?
2012. Yeah, the lockout shortened season.
Yeah, he was injured for that, and then he's come back, and he's, you know, he's not that 2010 player. He's, you know, the numbers are sort of dipping, but he's 34. He's 34 playing 32 minutes a night.
Yeah, but I think that's where the slow pace really helps guys like Randolph and Gasol. With Conley, it's weird because I think in a different system, Conley could be fantastic. But in this system, he works really well too.
Or it could just be he's good because of the system.
Mm.
We don't know.
You really think that with Mike Conley? He's a system player?
Has he shown he can be an up-and-down player? He's never had to be. So he's just efficient because the team is efficient. Mm-hmm. So I don't know whether he can be one of those all-star players on another. Like, he could either get really better or just be really a system player.
But he's going to get paid pretty well, though.
He's going to get paid, but there's no middle of the ground. You're not going to get the same player if somebody signs him away. Well, you won't get the same one. He'll either elevate or just fall off completely.
My problem with the Grizzlies here, and it's going to be my problem with the Grizzlies forever, is that at their peak, this is where they are. Like, they're not an NBA Finals team. They just aren't. And even if they make a big upset in the second round, do you really see them getting out of the Western Conference Finals?
That's the problem.
That's my problem with
them. They're in the West, and you just... They're always going to be that perennial 5th, 6th seed in a 4-seed, you know, pool out there.
Okay, we're going to get to our last Western Conference team, or last team in general. It's our second Western Conference team. This was a team that didn't make the playoffs, so people are going to be like, you're crazy. But we're talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Why are we not crazy to put a non-playoff team in this category?
Well, it's because you lose your best player, and if you lose the best player, who's the top three players?
Or is he?
Durant, of course he is.
You're sure that Russell Westbrook's not Oklahoma City's best player?
I say that assuredly because when he averaged a triple-double, that third triple was in turnovers. Mm-hmm. He is somebody who just selfishly plays the game and was not the best for the team. He was just somebody who tried to will the team forward, but didn't really have nobody help him out. He just tried to do everything in himself, and it showed.
Yeah. I was just pulling my Bayless. I was trying to get an idea of you I was trying to get you to take the bait that Durant's better than Westbrook in some way. But Kevin Durant, after they had his great MVP season in 2014, after they lost to the Spurs in Western Conference Finals, had a broken foot to start the season, missed a significant amount of time, which gave license for license to kill, basically, for Russell Westbrook. And then Russell Westbrook had a couple of injuries, including, I think, a dent in his face. Some kind of crazy, like, you know, Terminator type of injury that he came back from, had to wear a mask. Durant came back. He played only in about, 30 games?
Something like that.
He had great numbers. You know, he's Kevin Durant. He's spectacular. He scores
40. He had good numbers, but you watch him. He was like, okay, he's at 80, 90.
Yeah, he scores, but he looked a little slow. He looked like he was kind of ginger the whole time. And then they shut him down again for the rest of the season. Then came an injury to Serge Ibaka. They made a trade where they brought in Enes Kanter. And Kanter played well enough that he earned himself an extension with the Thunder, which a lot of people were laughing at, including Adam Murray. You can go ahead and talk about that for a second.
They gave $70 million to
a shooting power forward who
to a stretch 4 or 5. I don't even know
who's never played on a winning team.
Who hasn't really done much, and he's not going to even start on this team. I think Steven Adams is going to start with Ibaka, mm-hmm. and he's going to be coming off the bench to start with. And the problem with this team is I was hard on the coach and the GM, and I think rightfully so.
Sam Presti, you talk about the general manager, and then the head coach last year was Scotty Brooks. Now, they were 45-37, but because the West was so competitive, they weren't able to get that last spot. They lost the eighth spot to the Pelicans. Scotty Brooks was fired. They brought in Billy Donovan. Billy Donovan he was a Patino disciple in Kentucky, and then he coached at the University of Florida, where he won 2 national titles, had great, great success over in Gainesville. in terms of style of play, what do you, can you really make out anything from what Billy Donovan instituted in Florida that he's going to be able to do in
outside of those 2 years with Noah and
Horford and Brewer?
Horford and Brewer. What has that team done? How many people, how many NBA players has he put forth, really, besides Bradley Beal, who were...
Just a few. Like, guys like Matt Bonner, before that. Are you talking about since then or before
since.
Then? Since. Only some, like, maybe Nick Lathis, Maurice Spates, Eric Murphy.
So...
I think that's about it.
He had two solid years, and then Florida wasn't really...
Oh, Bradley Beal. Yeah,
I mentioned Bradley Beal, but they didn't really get too far, and they didn't really do anything. And then, you know, he flirted with Orlando, and then signed, and went back, and then, he will provide excitement for this team. I hope so. The rumblings are that players don't really like his system already, from what I've been reading.
Orlando had Dwight Howard at the time, and they seemed to be moving a little bit on up, but they needed that push. And then when Billy Donovan changed his mind, they brought in Stan Van Gundy, and they took off a little bit. Why was it an easier decision now for Billy to make that decision, you know, to leave Florida and try Oklahoma City? Is it because it really is a great job or a great potential spot to coach two guys like Durant and Westbrook?
That's the best potential spot you could have gotten in. Mm-hmm. Name another coaching opportunity. Outside Chicago. So you'd rather have Chicago with their sort of aging problem and
Billy Donovan focusing a little bit more on the defensive end than Hoiberg, I think would have helped that team in particular. I think it's more about the specifics there than it is about just name basis.
I think Oklahoma City is a better job opportunity.
I mean, they like to play up and down in Oklahoma City. Now I don't know how much of an interrupting type of owner Clay Bennett is when things are going badly, because the one time things went badly in Oklahoma City before this, he fired PJ Carlisimo within a matter of months. So I'm kind of curious to see what happens to Billy Donovan if things don't really go well in Oklahoma City. But I do think they will go well if Durant is healthy and Westbrook is healthy. I mean, that's the new Shaq and Kobe. That's the duo that you just do not want to face in the playoffs. Am I right?
That's the they're on autopilot with those two guys. They will easily, you know, they're an easy 4 or 5 seed, which is sad to say. But.
Just to play dummy for a second, what makes that combination so effective? You know, Westbrook as a combo guard and Durant as a do it all power forward.
LeBron, just their lights out shooting. The only reason they're dangerous is because they make everything they do. You don't need the other type of players if both are on fire. That's the,
yeah.
You know, you can say that for a lot, but they don't. You just all there's the they're the two players you can have complementary specialists around.
You get a little bit of fire and ice vibe from them with Durant kind of being a little bit more of the cool, steady type of guy, and then Russell Westbrook being like all the time, just so tenacious, so nasty.
Yeah, and that's what I think it makes better is Durant isn't that player who needs the ball in his hands all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He knows once you pass me, okay, I'm going to score, but you know, you guys can, I'm going to be a good teammate. It's not like, you know, the next Shaq and Kobe where, well, one ball wasn't enough for both of them. This one, they're more than content to share it, and that's why Harden was sort of the odd man out, and it's funny, you traded Harden away and you got Enes Kanter.
Yeah, but we've talked about that before with Harden, where, you know, you and I both agree that no matter how much of a dream scenario would have been, it would have been almost impossible to make it work, you know, not just in terms of finances, but also in terms of, like, you
playing
know,
styles.
Playing style of trying to share the ball. Sharing the ball between three guys is just like, even in the NBA, where you got the smartest minds in coaching, that's impossible. Like, I don't think there would have been any way to split the percentages of ball distribution between those three guys and not have them completely, like, go at each other's throats on every play trying to get the ball, whereas between Durant and Westbrook, it works a little bit.
Yeah, it works.
It just got to a position with Durant's injury where Westbrook needed the ball all the time because, and you've always criticized him before in the past for doing, Sam Presti has not been able to really surround the rest of that central cast with, like, really good backups and good reserves that can relieve them.
Exactly. And this was the Oklahoma City who would, you know, they'll make they made smart trades and they make smart draft picks. And
now they made moves. You know, they brought in Kyle Singler and DJ.
This was the first year they made moves. They've always said, "Nope, we have our developmental players on the bench," and then they realized they all suck.
Does Deion Waiters get a bad rap?
He gave himself a bad rap.
What is it that he can provide maybe to kind of save his career? I mean, he was a guy in Syracuse who was sort of a ball-handling guard. He tried to do the same thing in Cleveland, and when LeBron got there, he was like, I ain't having none of this. Trade this guy. And so he goes to Oklahoma City, kind of does the same thing because it was the happenstance that Durant got injured, and then, you know, they needed another shooter, you know, at the guard spot when Russell Westbrook was dominating things. So with Waiters there, what is his role here? Can he be a really good sixth man like he was in college?
He could be if they had some sort of veteran guy on the team to sit next to him. So sort of, I don't want to say like a Caron Butler type player or Hamilton, but somebody like, yo, you need to get smarter and realize it's not about you. It's not about how many touches you get. They ran out, Reggie to Detroit. Because he tried to be the same thing. It's just, well, you realize it's these two guys' team. You can find you'll get touches in the system. Just realize it's not about you and nobody cares about you.
Do you think Waiters is in a situation where he's going to have to start because of Westbrook being at the point, and then you got Kanter, Adams, and Ibaka, and Durant because they're all kind of bigger forwards? Or do you think there's going to be a chance for someone like Anthony Morrow or Kyle Singler to be a starter?
I think we're going to start Morrow first. Kyle Singler is where you're going to play. You can't play either of those at the two, so if you're going to have a Kanter, I still say it's Adams and Ibaka are going to be the starters. You sort of have to have an Anthony Morrow type guy in there to sort of.
Do you envision maybe Donovan playing big? Where you try to play that three-man group of Ibaka, Kanter, and Adams at the same time, along with Westbrook and Durant, maybe?
No, there's no way you can have Kanter
It'd be really hard. I agree with you, but I'm just...
The only way you could do that is if, like, you're facing Memphis in there.
Yeah.
They're throwing out their big lineup because it's just everybody's getting smaller, and this team just got bigger. And right now they're basically relying on... Deion Waiters to be that sort of that J.R. Smith type guy in Cleveland.
The two things that Donovan always prized in Florida was assists and defense in terms of points allowed. Those are two things that Oklahoma City struggled in last season with mostly a Westbrook-led lineup. They were 25th in assists. They were 24th in points allowed. Do you think they'll be able to focus on that, maybe improve the defense? Because the rebounding is great. They were first in the league in total rebounding and offensive rebounding. They get to the free throw line a ton because you have two superstar players. And then you're 6th in blocks thanks to Ibaka. So you're kind of set there, but their defense overall needs to improve massively. Do you think Donovan will be able to work on that?
He should, because I think we've learned that Ibaka isn't that big three. He's fallen off and he's sort of going to be that defensive guy we know he is. He's not going to be the guy who can handle the team. That's my feeling on that. And then you have Steven Adams, who I'm pretty sure they're going to keep starting him. Because maybe expectations last year were too high on him that we sort of expected him to do something, and the fact he didn't.
The big Kiwi, you mean?
Yeah. Because you were high on him last year. I'm like, I don't see it in any... You know, didn't do anything. I'm like, yeah, what am I supposed to be seeing here? And you can do defense. However, really, Durant, not the best defender. He'll do it, but...
He's better than most, but he's not elite.
Yeah, he'll do it.
Russell Westbrook, in my opinion, is an elite defender.
Yes, he is. And
I think he is.
Kanter, no.
Yeah.
So it might be one of these you have to go with the players that are given to you. And it's just, well, you're relying on these guys. You gave all these starters a ton of money. There's no money for anyone else. Your bench is just Waiters, Singler, and DJ.
Their bench is weird because they have good players, but they haven't really put it all together yet. You know, and now you've let go of Perry Jones, you've let go of Jeremy Lamb, you've given up on them from when they drafted them in 2012. Now you're bringing in pieces that you've picked up in trades, you know, guys like Singler, guys like DJ Augustin. They bring in Josh Eustis, who was their original draft pick. Cameron Payne, who was a rookie out of Murray State at point guard. I guess he's going to be there to be kind of the de facto backup for Russell Westbrook if DJ Augustin doesn't play well. So we'll see there.
And that kid has irrational confidence.
Cameron Payne?
Yes.
Oh, that's why he stuck out at Murray State. He was one of those guys who's – he was kind of like another Reggie Jackson where you were watching like, man, I don't know how good he really is because he came out of nowhere. But, man, he really believes in himself.
He thinks he's really good. I'm like, you're at Murray State. You're not really playing the highest of the high competition, so –
And we didn't see him at all in summer league because he had an injury. So he's sort of sight unseen in the NBA. We'll see what he can do. Mitch McGarry, I like him. You know, I think he's got potential there. I don't know if he's going to have room to play here because of Steven Adams and Ennis Kanter and Serge Ibaka and all these big guys that they got there. But it wouldn't shock me if he sort of turned into a good bench player. So they got some pieces there. It really depends on how Donovan can push all those buttons. Because in my opinion, you and I kind of debated this, I think they can win an NBA championship. Like this year, I think they can win one.
So that's where we disagree, and that's why I have them down here in this group as opposed to the next group, because I don't see them.
Yeah, cause I mean, because if you do, if, I mean, all the listeners who are doing process elimination, you've been following the, you know, the rankings, you know, then you could probably make a good idea of who the top five are. And if you're a casual NBA fan, you'll probably know who the top five are.
Like,
can the Thunder beat the Warriors? I think so, maybe. Can they beat the Cavs? Sure. You got Kevin Durant to match up with LeBron. Can they beat the Spurs? Probably not. It seems to me like the Spurs have their number. Can they beat the Rockets? Yeah. You know, I think that they're built to beat a team like that. And who's the other team that we're missing here? The Clippers? They beat them before. That's all I can say.
And that's the thing is you mentioned four teams in the Western, and I have them as a 15. So
yeah,
of those five teams, one of those teams is
going to be. And that was what the decision came into. Fact, like, do you think that they can get past the second round with those teams in front of them? And the answer is,
maybe.
That's where it's going to get really, really hard for Donovan. That's when it's going to be. I mean, really, it's winning time in the postseason for all these teams. It's not. I mean, building up your team in the regular season and soul searching and taking a journey and all that stupid shit they say in interviews when they in the regular season. That's fine and dandy, but really for these teams, it's about the playoffs. It's about what you can do when you get into the playoffs in April and May. And potentially June, and what you can really do at your best. That's really where the money's made. If you can't do it there, then you're stuck here.
Yep. So bold prediction time.
Well, let's do our our rankings. We got to do our rankings here because we're in the top 10. Who's number 10 for you here?
I'm gonna have to go with the Wizards.
So you think they're the worst team of this bunch? I would say the Bulls. I think the Bulls are the worst of this bunch. Number 9, I would go with the Wizards.
I would go with the Bulls.
Okay, so we're flip-flopping. Number 8?
Hawks.
I would agree. I would say the Hawks at 8.
Okay, so then we both agree Grizz 7, Thunder 6.
Yeah, I say Grizzlies at... I think the Thunder are better than the Grizzlies.
Yeah, the Thunder's... Thunder, like we sort of mentioned, sort of that 1A, the group who didn't make the top five because you only have five.
So would you say the Grizzlies at 7?
Yeah.
You would say the same thing. So I have Thunder, Grizzlies, Hawks, Wizards, Bulls, and you have Thunder, Grizzlies, Hawks, Bulls, Wizards. So it's just a flip-flop between the Wizards and the Bulls. All right, bold predictions.
You go first.
What's that?
You first.
Oh, me first? Give me just a little bit there.
All right, then fine. Me first. Oklahoma City will make a major trade.
John Wall will be top 3 in MVP voting.
Bobby Portis will be first team all rookie.
Tiago Splitter is going to be seen as one of the best moves in the NBA offseason for the Hawks.
I'm going to say the Hawks just struggle out of the gate.
I think the Bulls have a chance to miss the playoffs.
I think the Grizzlies will go the full game without making one three-pointer.
I thought they already did that. You think? Do you think things could really go south for the Bulls? Like, that's a real tumble. That would be like two tiers down.
Did I say Bulls?
Yeah.
Did I say Hawks?
I think
I could buy both of them. I think this team could just fall flat on its face because this new coach wants a new system. They're going to come slow out of the gate because he's going to want to have his style, and maybe Derrick Rose is injured again, or Jimmy Butler doesn't live up to his contract immediately, and the press gets on him.
It's funny. Which one do you think will work out better coming out of college? Will it be Billy Donovan's team, or will it be Fred Hoiberg's team? And which style fits better for the NBA?
I think probably both these coaches would be better with the other team.
Flip-flopped, I agree there. If Hoiberg were in Oklahoma City, I think that would work out great.
You trade Hoiberg for Donovan, I think it's a solid trade for both teams.
Yeah, and Enes Kanter can get traded just because. But okay, on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We're going to be back with our top five as we finish our regular season previews and give you maybe a little bonus episode.